This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The economic sanctions against Iran that could be eased or toughened quite quickly.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and economics. Talks between world powers and Iran get back underway today, aimed at persuading Iran to ease back on its nuclear program. Iran is looking for relief from economic sanctions. The last round of talks ran into a disagreement over Iran's insistence that its right to enrich uranium should be recognized by the international community. The BBC's James Reynolds is at the conference center in Geneva, where the media are awaiting updates from negotiations. Good morning.
Good morning, David.
If these talks show some progress, any sense of which sanctions might be eased first?
The United States will probably try to ease sanctions when it comes to some of the frozen assets that Iran holds in overseas banks. And the indications we're getting suggest that perhaps up to $10 billion in frozen assets could be released, although I stress that that's still an educated guess and not a confirmation.
What would be the strategy if indeed some overseas assets were unfrozen? Those could be refrozen if the negotiations did not progress?
That's what the White House says, and it's tried to make clear, particularly to a very skeptical Congress, that sanctions relief would be reversible. Essentially, the White House wants to look at sanctions relief that the White House itself could control and not have to go through Congress. Because one of the big problems Mr. Obama faces is that if Congress imposes a sanction, it's only Congress that can lift it.
The BBC's James Reynolds in Geneva. James, thank you.
My pleasure, David.
Now let's check the market numbers. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all down moderately this morning. The FT 100 in London is down 0.5%. The key index in Hong Kong went up 0.2%. The retailer JCPenney's shares with the world its profits report later this morning, profits or lack thereof. This is a company that's been on a roller coaster ride. The last CEO picked a course that proved disastrous, doing away with the regular discounts that JCPenney customers had come to expect and losing billions in sales. Kate Davidson reports.
The problem is JCPenney was so far gone, it takes time to right the ship. Guilford Securities analyst Bernie Sosnick says the floundering penny got stuck with a lot of unsold merchandise, so it stopped buying inventory. Then stores ran out of the basics Penny's known for.
You couldn't find the right size. You couldn't find the colors you wanted. So it took months before you could rebuild that kind of inventory.
And then there's cash. Bert Flickinger of the Strategic Resource Group says Penny's burned through a few billion dollars this year.
Penny does not have the markdown and the merchandising and the marketing money to compete on the big brands at deeply discounted prices the way Penny's key competitors can.
The real test may not be today's earnings or even the next quarters. After all, Sosnick says.
All but zombies report a profit for the holiday season.
It's how well JCPenney builds up its base business to get through the slack months after that. I'm Kate Davidson for Marketplace.
Today in our series called The New Math of Healthcare, stories from reporters at the New York Times and here at Marketplace, people are living longer with terminal illnesses. In addition to the often long and sometimes painful process of dying, the costs for end-of-life care, even for those with insurance, can quickly deplete a lifetime's worth of savings and more. Paul Sullivan writes the Wealth Matters column in the New York Times. As he reports now, there are some ways that financial experts say you can prepare.
It's not that every terminal diagnosis is going to cost families $1 million.
This is what I call the roulette wheel of illness.
Dan Fish is an elder law attorney based in New York. He says the cost for most people with most terminal illnesses, say cancer or kidney or lung disease, will be covered by health insurance, but not all.
You spin the wheel of fortune again, come up with Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, post-stroke, and now you've got a serious illness and you have a financial exposure on top of that.
Financial exposure, because most insurance does not pay for custodial care, the non-medical care someone with a disease like Alzheimer's needs. Hired help can be between $15 to $20 an hour, and it can quickly run into the hundreds of thousands of dollars in the final years. Add in lost wages for family caregivers, and costs can quickly hit the million-dollar mark. Tom West is a financial advisor in Northern Virginia. He helps families plan for paying for long-term care. He says part of the challenge is to avoid making costly mistakes.
A lot of times people will find themselves making financial decisions based on emotion, based on short-term urgency, based on getting misinformation that they wouldn't be making in the absence of long-term care.
Wes says there's a lot of uncertainty about how an illness will progress. He advises clients to plan for all scenarios. That means keeping enough cash on hand for emergencies. It also means making full use of deductions to offset taxes on distributions from retirement accounts, and also investing the money you have so it lasts longer. But still, a loved one is sick, and logic doesn't always rule. Wes found this out himself when his father-in-law was diagnosed with kidney failure in 2009. His father-in-law wanted to get out of the stock market, to play it safe. As a professional, Wes knew it was a bad decision.
But in the end, you know, my father-in-law and my wife wanting my father-in-law to be comfortable ended up being sort of the rule of the day. And we ended up getting out of the market mostly because everybody wanted to play their primary family role.
Some things neither money nor illness can change. Experts say it all comes down to how you prepare for it. I'm Paul Sullivan for Marketplace.
The story was produced by Kerry Donahue. For more on the New Math of Healthcare series, check out the Your Money section of today's New York Times and Marketplace.org. On both sites, you can find, for instance, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein's story about how doctors die. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.